Tonight is number 49, and it's the first part of the story of Avshalom, the son of David. So David's sorrows continue, and the penalty for the sin of Bathsheba continues to be exacted also. Recall Chazal, we quoted a few times already, that David will suffer four sorrows. And just like David acted precipitously with Bathsheba, so too Amnon acted precipitously with Tamar, and now Avshalom, who's, when we left him last time, he's seething with anger and waiting for vengeance, so he takes the house of David into the realm of Shrichas Damim, homicide. And just like Amnon had taken them into Arroyos, so he took them into Shrichas Damim. So literally, Midah Keneged Midah, what David did is being visited upon him, where everyone has bechira. It's not as if God is ordaining this, but that's the way it is. This is the punishment that is carried out through individual bechira, and David is suffering the results. Now, we left off last time, number one, in Perek Yud Gimel of Shmuel Beis, Pasuk Chaf Beis, V'lo diber Avshalom im Amnon l'meirov atov. Avshalom did not speak with Amnon, neither bad nor good, meaning he completely ostracized him, ignored him. He sonav Shalom es Amnon al dvar asher inas Tamar achoso, because Avshalom hated Amnon because Amnon had raped his sister Tamar. Now we all know that hatred is never good. Anger is never good except very limited circumstances, but more to the point, where anger or hatred dominate the person's life, invariably that life is going to be distorted. And you find this too often, unfortunately, that people base their entire lives on anger, whether it's anger versus their parents, or anger versus a spouse, or against the rabbi. All these things happen, and that becomes the sole motivational force. They just live and breathe that type of hatred, and invariably, in fact, it's inevitably, that life has to be corrupted. And people begin justifying to themselves the worst possible crimes, because the victim is deserving, and they're completely right and entitled. And I've seen it, by the way, in all three cases. People who just would rather destroy their lives in anger against their parents, or against an ex-spouse, sometimes the current spouse, or against the rabbi. And that's what Avshalom, this grievance against Amnon, and not to say it wasn't legitimate, but this grievance completely took over his life. Yet Chazal note that, just as Agavurcha, because we just finished these parshios, in number two, it's the Medrash in Vayeshev, that the Shvatim were on a higher level. The Shvatim had a grievance against Yosef, but they didn't keep it in. The brother saw that Yaakov loved Yosef more than the others. It's Parsha Pei Dalin, Bracious Rabba. Amrav Ava Bar Zeira, Mitoch Genuson Shal Shvatim Ato Yodea Shivchon. From seeing the shame of the tribes, you see their greatness. Because it says here, V'lo Giber Avshalom Im Amnon Meirov Atov. He never said anything to him. Avshalom never said a word to Amnon, not a positive word, not a negative word. So in fact, Amnon didn't necessarily think that Avshalom hated him, or didn't think the hatred was so intense. Didn't say anything to him. Dai belibei belibei, what was in his heart, he kept in his heart. Ram hocho, but here with the brothers, the lo yachlu dabro l'shalom, they couldn't speak peaceably to Yosef. Dai belibhom bepumhon. Whatever was in their heart was in their mouths. They weren't hypocrites, the tribes. They hated Yosef, and they let him know they hated him, and they told him the reasons why they hated him. So Amnon kept it in. And Rabbah makes a very interesting point that I think we know to be true in our lives. It's number five. The Rabbah says here, he didn't speak to him at all. Why? Lamadu mizek ki kvar hus tusar hatsino kishiyamot ha'odam udaberim reyehu b'bnei hatsino l'mirov atov. Whenever a person starts to speak to another person, the hatred diminishes, because you see some humanity in the other individual. See, even if you're an enemy with someone, you start to dialogue with them, the intensity of the hatred is bound to dissipate. So it happens to be true. That's why everyone always encourages dialogue, even meaningless dialogue, because it just you feel better about the person if nothing's accomplished. So now you see why Avshalom didn't want to talk to Amnon. He wanted to harbor a grudge, and he just waited for the moment of vengeance. Vengeance came soon enough. 2 years, number three. Pasuk Chav Gimel. Vayihi l'shnasayim yamim, vayiyu gozazim l'Avshalom, b'val chatzor, asherim Ephraim. 2 years later, they were shearing his sheep in the plain of Chatzor. Vayikra Avshalom b'chol b'nei ha-melech. Avshalom invited all the princes, meaning all his brothers and actually all his half-brothers, except for Amnon. So you say, Amnon, he's the crown prince. It's not l'fi chlodo to go and watch everyone shear their sheep. Now, the shearing of the sheep was a great festival. It was a happy time. Then and now. We don't have in Tinek as often as we should, but I'm sure it would be a very joyous time if we did. V'yavah Avshalom el ha-melech, so Avshalom went to the king, v'yomer, and he said to the king, Hinei no gozim la-becho. Behold, we're now shearing the sheep of your servant, Yelech no ha-melech v'avadov im avdecho. So he invited his father, king, come join us in the shearing of sheep. V'yomer ha-melech el Avshalom, albini, alno nelech kulano. No, my son, let us not all go, v'lo nichbar alecho, we won't be burdensome to you. Vayifretzbo, so Avshalom tried to convince him, but he was being disingenuous, duplicitous. He didn't want his father to come. In the end, he decided not to go, David, and he blessed him. So Avshalom went to plan B, which was really plan A. The plan was to get Amnon out into the fields. Vayomer Avshalom, Velo yelech itanu Amnon achi. So if you're not going, let Amnon come. My king is not going to go. I would never have thought inviting the crown prince, the heir apparent. But now that you're not going, maybe you'll send him. Vayomer, it was a very festive time, drinking, sudos. Vayomer Amelech, Loma yelech imach. So the king said, why should he go with you? What's in it for him? So David was slightly suspicious, but not enough. Vayifratzbo Avshalom. Avshalom begged him, and he sent Amnon, he sent all the princes, everybody came. Now what was happening when they went? So look at number 6. Again, it is the Ralbag. The Ralbag on Pasuk Chav Dalid says, Hineina gozim lavdecha, kishehayu lohem gozizim, hayu smechem alatova. When they were shearing the sheep, it was a tremendous festival. Rashi says they would make a mishta, a big banquet. Just like David had this incident with Navo, which we discussed 2 years ago. V'hinei hoya mitachbulas Avshalom. This was really his whole strategy. Sheshom ha'melech sheyelechu v'avodov imo l'smoach v'lachov l'shtos imo. He asked the king to come, join, party, eat, drink. He knew David would not want to go. The Leze Majeste. Gamosa Zekadeshi Yisratza David was Shloach Amnon Imo. So you did it so that not that David should come, but that he should ask for a second request, and the king would not refuse, that Amnon should go. Vilitanus Liboel Dvar Amnon Asina Ruya Ben Avshalom Ben Amnon. So David did not think at all, did not realize the extent of the hatred, the intensity of the enmity between Avshalom and Amnon because of what happened to Tamar. Amnon was now the Bechor, was the Bechor. He was fit for royalty. That's why he'll mourn Amnon more than the others. Let's look back for a moment at the Rabag, which is at the actually end of Shmuel Beis. Here he goes through the lessons to be derived from every story. But here, we'll see three tonight, but here from this, there's also a klal that comes up. It's number 4. Hanuna, I wrote the 51st lesson from Shmuel Beis. L'odiyah sheroi l'odim sheyisiyashay v'mashe nishal mimeno. That a person, when he's asked a question, he has to deliberate. He shouldn't be impulsive. He has to think through all the ramifications. Nezek, Kodem Hiskimo L'Dvar Shelahi. Because there might be some unforeseen harm that accrues if he agrees to something without thinking it through entirely. And in fact, David did not really think through the ramifications. Halo tereki David bavur shelo ityashev al masha shal mimenu, sheyelech itam non, nosan lo ashe lo so. Because David did not think through all the possibilities. All right? And what was the clearest possibility he could have thought of? It just struck me when I looked at the area last week. It's like Yaakov and Yosef. So you learn from the story of Yaakov and Yosef and the brothers, that Yaakov, of course, so regretted sending Yosef into the lion's den. So Yaakov might have underestimated the hatred of the brothers for Yosef. He was aware of it, he thought this was a way to ingratiate Yosef to them. Of course, it turned out to be wrong. Now you see the same thing here. David underestimated the extent of the hatred of Avshalom from Amnon. He didn't think it through. So he took what was an unusual request. I mean, they shear the sheep every year. So why all of a sudden this year the king is asked to come? And in lieu of the king, Amnon would come. He didn't think it through at all. He should have thought of it, because he should have thought of the whole story. It's 2 years, it's true, but in 2 years, you know, your children, one is not talking to the other, you can't assume that it's happenstance. Of course, all this was orchestrated by Ashgacha. So David should have these evils arise in his home. Ki harigas Amnon yamasul v'derech el atachle sahuk moshenir midivrei zasipur. Like we said at the beginning, all these things were recompense for the problems with Bathsheba. In any event, he didn't think it through, and the results are as tragic as we think. Let's go back to number 3, and now it's Pasuk Chavtes. Amnon joins Avshalom in Harei Ephraim at Baal Chatzor. By Yitzav, you know, Baal Chatzor, I think they have excavation, very famous excavation spot today. By Yitzav Avshalom es Narav Lemor, Avshalom then instructed his servants, saying to them, Re'u no ketov lev Amnon b'yayin. When Amnon gets a little inebriated with wine, v'amarti aleichem, and I say to you at that moment, Haku es Amnon v'amitemoso, strike Amnon and kill him, al tiro, don't be afraid, haloki anochi tzivisi eschem, because I'm the one commanding you, I'll take responsibility, chizku, be strong, v'yu l'vnei choyl, and be brave, be soldiers. So naturally they were hesitant, that's why he had to give them the instruction another time, because they're being asked to kill the crown prince. Nonetheless, they're being asked by another prince. They did exactly what he said. They did exactly what was said. They killed Amnon when he was a little intoxicated, and then each person mounted his own mule and fled, because who knows how the story's going to play out? Who knows what the spin is going to be? Who knows, in fact, how Avshalom is going to explain what happened? He could always say, these people did it, I had nothing to do with it. And Allah itself is well known as to who the responsibility, with whom the responsibility lies. In fact, who else fled? Not just his servants, but Kol Bnei HaMelech. All the princes fled also. Why? Because if they saw Avshalom's servants killing Amnon, for all they knew, they were going to kill all the princes. The only one being left would be Avshalom. So they headed to the hills. Because they all disappeared, now the story comes even worse than it was. Vayihi hema baderech, vashmo vayel David lemor. They were all on the run. The word came back to David saying, he called Avshalom as kol b'nei hamelech. Avshalom has killed all the king's children. Not one was left. With that news, the king arose and tore his garments and lay down on the ground. Everyone sat around him in torn clothing as well. Meaning the king began to mourn and to mourn. Now, what happens? So obviously they fled for a good reason, and you know, as we saw last week in West Virginia, the early reports are not usually accurate. But the bottom line is everyone disappeared. If no one returned to Yerushalayim, then the assumption was not unfounded that they're all dead, because they all dispersed. So who intervenes? Well, this name is known to us from last time. Vayan Yonadav. Yonadav, you'll remember, is David's cousin. David's cousin, his first cousin, and Yonadav is the one who gave the advice to Amnon to pull that ruse with Tamar to bring her into his chamber. So now he takes the other side, perhaps trying to ingratiate himself with David and Avshalom, because his patron Amnon is now dead. So it always happens when one dictator or one even a politician disappears from the scenes. Everybody gathers around the potential successor because they want to maintain their position. It's no different today. Vayan Yonadav ben Shema Achi David Vayomer Al Yomar Adoni Eskol Na'orim Bnei Hamelech Hemisu. Don't say that they're all dead. It's not true. Kamnon Levado Meis. Only Amnon died. How do we know that? Our doc says he had his own scouts. He had his own intelligence network, which again, the politicians often do. And someone ran back from Chatzor and told Yonadav that only Amnon was killed, not Avshalom. So now he was able to reassure David of two things. First, only one son was dead. Not that it's a trivial thing, but it's only one, not all of them. And secondly, you should not think it's political in motivation. It's unique. It's not about politics. It's not about who's going to succeed you. Rather, it's a personal vendetta. It's a grudge that Avshalom had against Amnon since the day he raped his sister Tamar. So now it's controlled in its damage. It's not a threat to the kingdom or to the monarchy. It's just an internal dispute, as bitter and horrific as it sounds. Now, don't even think for a moment that all your sons are dead. It's only Amnon who's dead. Only Amnon is gone. Now, by Yivrach Avshalom, Avshalom flees, and you see the pasuk continues that in that moment, the Tzofet, soon after the scout had come back and told Yonadav what happened, they saw in back of, trailing behind the entire entourage of the other princes. And in fact, David saw, and Yonadav said, Hinei v'nei melch, bo, kidvar abdecho kenaya. Exactly what I told you, the other princes are back. Vayikichal asol adaber, v'nei v'nei melch, bo, vayisu kolom vayitku, they all cried. So now the mourning is focused on Amnon, because at least everyone else was alive. Of course, where does that leave Avshalom? Now Avshalom is a fugitive. It says here by Yivrach Avshalom, the next few psukim, again I bolded it, Avshalom Barach, Avshalom Barach. Avshalom lived on the run for 3 years. What should be done with him? Is he a murderer? Well, look at 18 in Oz Melech on the backside, in the middle, in the second paragraph. Al pi adin, Avshalom lo haya chayv nisa. Mikra din, he's not chayv nisa. But he didn't kill Avshalom. He didn't kill Amnon. Allah is clear, the Rambam says. Hashalech avadov arago, person who sends a servant, dispatches a servant to kill someone. Shofech domin, Va'avon harigo biyado v'chayv miso la'shamayim. Name the Mrs. Beistin. If someone hires a hitman, so the halacha we well know, divrei harav, the divrei hatalmid, divrei mishomim. The Rebbe tells you to do something, the Talmud tells you to do something. The Talmud says to do something. Who do you listen to? The Rebbe. Who's the Rebbe? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you lo tirtzach. And a flesh and blood tells you tirtzach. So who are you going to listen to? So technically, Avshalom is not guilty of anything. We say divrei harav, divrei atalmid, divrei mishomim to make the obvious point, not so obvious, that there's no morality in blindly following orders, even in a military situation. Yafal pichein, av shol mihel avrach l'gishur. Even though he's not chayav nisa necessarily, he still fled. Why? Amri from Oz Melech. Ki yada shekol elu har... This continues in the Rambam. These types of murderers, like the mafia, they dispatch people. They don't do the killing themselves. They only boast about it on the wiretaps, but they never actually do the killing themselves. Nonetheless, if the king wants to kill them, this is a general rule. If the king wants to kill someone for the betterment of society, then that is the royal prerogative. He can. And there's no greater tikkun olam than dispensing with someone who killed his own brother in cold blood. A conspiracy that was long in planning. Really, how long did Avshalom plan this? 2 years. That's a long time. By Hilish Nasam Yamin, 2 years in the planning, waiting for the moment. So if anything, this is the time for Hitarvut Mishpat HaMelech, where the king can intervene. Well, what did David do? What did David do? Fortunately, unfortunately, David did nothing. The Mefarshim argue whether he even made an attempt to find Avshalom, but it seems he did nothing, and he did nothing for a reason which we can appreciate, which is part of the tragedy of this time in David HaMelech's life. And that is, just like he saw himself in unknown, because he himself acted improperly, so too he saw himself in Avshalom. What did Avshalom do? He plotted against someone and had him killed. That bell rang a little too loudly for David to respond to. See, he in a sense responded in the only way he could, crying. So the Navi makes clear, it's a few psukim down, Pasuk Lamed Zayin. So Avshalom fled, went to Geshur. So that's the chapter pasuk. David mourned his son for many days. Many days. Because he was in Geshur for 3 years. The truth is, Avshalom, like a real fugitive, ran from place to place. He didn't stay in one place for too long because he was afraid of David following him. Again, some maintain David did send out squads to find him. Others say David did not. If you'd ask me, I think we know one way or the other, but it would seem he did nothing. He did nothing because he was in mourning. Now the Rabbag says in 7, there's a contrast here that should jump out to us, because David, this is his second son to die. The first son was the baby he had with Bathsheba, who died. And there, right after the baby died, he jumped up from his tomb and went about his business. Here he mourned for 3 years. What's the difference? So Rabbag says in 7, on Pasuk Lamed Zayin, it's a fair question. Why is he mourning so much here? The difference is the calculation David made. What was he doing before the child died? He was davening and he was fasting. The purpose of tzom, the purpose of tzom is not just to fast, but to lose weight. Tfilah, bakash, it's tshuva. So David was shav, attempted to repent in order to change the fate of his infant. V'zed davar bilti ra'ui achar mos hayeled. But after the child died, there's no point in tzom and tfilah. It's too late. But here it's different. Here he's not fasting or praying for Amnon. Here is mourning Amnon. Mourning is different. This type of worry, this it's more than worry. This type of obsessive even compulsive grief that he can't escape when is natural when someone close to you dies. This is his mourning over the death of Amnon. Went out for 3 years. David is now in his 60s, by the way. So keep in mind, he died when he was 70. He mourned for 3 years. If you would ask me, I would say, with this, he's mourning not only Amnon, but he's mourning his baby who died, and now he's mourning the chait all over again. And that's why he couldn't shake himself out, because he knew from the promise of Nathan Hanavi that these tzoros would befall him. So each time a tzora came up, it just reawakened the whole sin of Bathsheba. So David is in a profound grief as a result of this, and Amnon, and what it means for his home. Now keep in mind as well, it's not a crime of passion that Avshalom committed, because it happened 2 years later. His motivation might have been legitimate, but it doesn't. Motivation doesn't allow you to kill people. You have motivation to kill people every now and then. It doesn't mean we can do it. And now David sees his whole household falling apart. These things can't go on. In a real sense, he's lost not only Amnon. Of course, he's lost. He's lost Avshalom also. So now he's lost three children. David mourns him for 3 years, and then something happens. The end of that parak, the last line. But Techal David HaMelech Hotseh Shal Al Shalom Ki Nicham Al Amnon Ki Meis. David then, after 3 years, Techal Rashi says it means he started to long for Al Shalom. He yearned for him. The Targum says V'chamidas Nafsho De David. He began to covet seeing Al Shalom again. That's what Rashi says. Yet Barbanel, like the Radak, quotes the Ibn Ezra that after 3 years, the mother of Avshalom intervened and told David it was enough. But others say no, but Tachal means that he, Lotseisel Avshalom, after 3 years, that's when he decided, Lotseisel Avshalom, to go out to Avshalom and capture him. Capture him. That he was no longer overcome by his chait. And now we decided to seek justice. Indeed, there's a basic machlokas amongst the Mefarshim, what David did. Did he try to capture Avshalom and bring him to justice during these years? Or did David do nothing but grieve over Avshalom and over Amnon, having lost Avshalom also at this point? Did he do nothing but grieve, paralyzed because of his own history? That itself is hard to determine. We don't know. We can understand the Navi each way. But somebody does intervene in a very clever way. Unfortunately, the end result is not as happy as we think. Vayeda Yoav ben Tsruya Hilev HaMelech al Avshalom. Yoav ben Tsruya know that the heart of the king was on Avshalom. Now, just like the previous pasuk at the end of Perek Yud Gimel, and it also in some type of equivocal, ambiguous language. So too, this is number 8 on the top left, the Perek Yud-Bal begins also with equivocal language. Yoav was the chief of staff, Yoav knew that Lev HaMelech El Avshalom, that the heart of the king was set on Avshalom. What does that mean? It means either that he's sympathetic to Avshalom, and the time is ripe for reconciliation, or that Barbanel says something else in number 10. The Sipera Kosov Sheim Hayos Shadavid Manas Atzmo, or Manas Avodav Mitzes Achayav Shalom, even of the years he'd refrained, either himself or his servants, from capturing Avshalom, he named Kolze Yada Yov and Srik Hileva Melcha Avshalom. Yov still knew that the king was set on doing something, Ratzalomar Shehoya Libo Linotemi Menu. He wanted vengeance from Avshalom, Ime Yoshal Yatzai Lov, even though he'd gone after him. He hadn't forgotten about him either. Ulafisha Yoda, Shahisa Ivova, Sina, Daimbali Bogino, Kemi Avshalom, Hutzach Yovu Vakeshi Shachachamo, Shetavo, Elamelech, Mosatach Bloshe Yiskor. Therefore, he sought the intervention of someone else. Now, what was Yoav's motivation? Again, you know, I always say, you can't, unless Chazal tell us, you never know what people's motivation is. Because something, it's belayed. So Yoav's motivation could be a virtuous one. He's the chief of staff, so he's in charge of David's security. That's to protect David. Who does he have to protect? Who's David's primary enemy now? Unfortunately, it's Avshalom. So he has to do something to effect some type of, if not reconciliation, at least a meeting, a rapprochement between David and Avshalom. He could want to protect himself also, because a fugitive prince is destabilizing to the kingdom. What do fugitive princes usually do? They round up support amongst the disgruntled citizenry. Or Yoav, this is what I think, if you'd ask me, was trying to secure his own future. Because at the end of the day, no matter how you look at it, Avshalom is the crown prince now. According to the opinion that he's the natural son of David, not the Bas Ben Yifastar. So if he's a natural, if he's the crown prince, Yoav's chief of staff, David is aging, he wants a job too. He doesn't want to be tossed on David's funeral pyre, so to speak. So therefore, Yoav and Sriya intervenes, but he could not do it himself directly. Look at number 19 in the Rabbag. It's the bottom right on the flip side. Rabbag, another lesson from this. Nun Beis. Lo dia shein roi levakesh davar me'ish ma He said it's not appropriate to ask for something you know you won't get. All right, children have a hard time learning this. I guess so do adults. Don't ask someone to do something if you know they can't do it, because they'll just say no and they'll feel bad. You'll feel bad and they'll feel bad. There has to be another way. Sipek shelo isorer Yoav l'shtadel im haMelech David l'shivis Avshalom. This explains why Yoav did not intervene directly with the king to restore Avshalom. Ada sheyada ki leiv David al Avshalom ki nicham al hamelchi meis, until he knew the time was right. But then he couldn't ask because he might have had other motivations. He might have acted out of self-interest. So what did he do? It was actually a beautiful plan. So the Navi says, it's back at number 8, Vayishlach Yoav Tekoa Vayikach Misham Yisho Chachamot. He went to Tekoa. Tekoa is a little town today east of Ephrat. And he found a wise woman there. Wise woman. Why so wise? So Rashi says, but the Gemara says in the Menachos, Daf Pei Hei, Tekoa was known for its wisdom, its wise people, male and female, because of the olive oil that was there. It's always puzzled me. Tekoa is famous for its olive oil, so why did the Maccabim have to go to the Galil to get the olive oil, which was a 3.5-day journey back and forth? They could have gone to Tekoa, which was a 1-day journey back and forth. I once asked this question to one of the tour guides in Israel, and I don't remember the answer. I don't remember. I don't think he knew. It's a good question. In any event, he hired this woman and told her to ask this Shiloh to David. He told her to dress up like an Avela, wear big day Avel, don't put on any perfume, all right? And pretend you're a woman who is in mourning. And then you'll go to the king, and you'll tell the king exactly what I say, by Yosem Yoaves Hadvarim Tefiah. Indeed, this is the famous case of the Isha HaTekalit. Isha HaTekalit comes to the king, falls before him, Arzo, bows down, says to the king, save me, Hoshia HaMelech. The king says, what's the trouble? And now she says, in our handout, it's number 11, tells the following story. She's an almana. Her husband died, she's a widow. Your maidservant has two sons. These two sons, they fought in the field. There was no one to rescue either of them. And one struck the other and killed him. Parents' nightmare. The whole family now came up, they're all Galei Adam, and they said to her, Tinias Makei Achiv, give us your other son, Unamisehu, we'll kill him. Galei Adam, the blood avenger. V'nefesh Achiv, Asheharog, because he killed his brother. V'nashmida Gamas Hayaresh, and will destroy his heir. Because what happens? What happens? The two sons, the sons inherit the father. They split the father's inheritance. Now the one son dies, the brother inherits everything. So now you're going to have Ratzachta v'gam Yerashko. V'chibu es gachalti asher nishor levilti simli shishem v'sheris al pnei adamot. Now she pleads her case. V'chibu es gachalti, they will extinguish my last coal. I only have one son left. I'll be left, and his name will be left with nothing on the face of the earth. That was what she said. That was the story that she told. Asked the king to intervene. So the king said, I didn't write this down, it's a long story. So you don't have the handout. The king said to her, they said, go home, Bani Asav Alayah. I'll command you. I'll take care of it. The Isha Tkawis then said to the king, no. What will happen? I'll go back. Nothing will change. And they'll kill him. And then what? She wanted him to take a shvua, to swear that the only just approach is to save the son. Notwithstanding that he killed someone, to save him, that he shouldn't be killed, and the mother left bereft of both sons. So the king said, no, he took a shvua. And she said again, the girl Adam is going to kill. And he said, no, Chai Hashem, that was a shvua. As God lives, im yipol misaras b'nech artzah. Even one hair of your son falls to the ground. But Tamar Isha, then she said to him, can I say something else to you? Vayomer daveri. And now, of course, she was wise to the whole scheme. He said, yes. And now you have Pasuk Yud Gimel, which is 12 in the bottom left. She says, Vatomer Isha, v'lomachos shafta kazos al am Elokim. Why did you even think such a story about God's people? Do you think it's true in God's people, one son, a brother, can kill a brother? Let the king not say about this matter that he was mistaken, rather, so the king should not return his nidach, his banished son, rather you should return your banished son. And now it becomes clear to David what the whole intent was. The woman said, the woman's case, one son killed another son in the field. They want to kill the other son? What's the response? The case is not exactly the same, but close enough that David says, that the woman says to David, this is about your own nidach, your own banished son, Avshalom. He killed his brother, but now he's afraid of being killed. So what's going to happen? They'll all be killed. And now she uses an argument. You don't have the pasuk, but I'll read it and we'll explain it in the Barbanel. Kimos namus. We're all going to die. V'chamayim anigarim arzo asher lo yaseifu. Like water that flows along the ground that can't be collected. Once the water flows, you can't get it back. V'yisrael kim nefesh, and God spares nobody. V'chashav machashavos l'vilti yidach min nidach. And the king then therefore should ponder thoughts, meaning think very long and hard before permanently banishing anyone. And that's why I came to speak to the king, so as to reunite the king's family. So the Abarbanel gives very interesting analysis of the questions that she raised. You find this in let's go back first to the 13, Rashi in the top right. Lomachos shafta zos. Why, she says to David, why did you suspect the Am Hashem? Shechoshadata li Yisrael sheyavo laroga sasheni b'lo edim asra. And you think Jews would come and kill someone without witnesses or warning. You shouldn't think of the king that you're mistaken in this. But davar hazeh, shechoratzo l'acherim, shemarta li lo yipo misars b'nech arzo, that which you said to me so strenuously, that not one hair of my son would be harmed. This is talking about your sons. Don't think that I spoke like a guilty party. It's really about your son. Now the Barbanel explains, starting in 16, you can't read the whole thing, but what exactly the woman was telling David. Really very straightforward, interesting arguments. First she said, if you skip down, I underlined it. You see the four tainas she raised in that pasuk. Kimos namus. Why do you want to kill Avshalom. Most of us, Ratzulomar, Shamisa Nigzeres HaKolchoy, everybody's going to die. Even Amnon was going to die. So someone's a victim. In Kenameis Kodom Yomo, Ela Taromus Rav, Achashasof Elamus. Someone is killed. He dies a year before his time, 50 years before his time. In real terms, not a lot. In terms of the earth's existence, not a lot at all. So he was going to die anyway. People were all going to die. So it was Amnon's time to die. Second, she said, Ataina Shein is, V'chamayim anigarim arts asher lo yaseif, like water which flows and can't be brought back. So in terms of a person who steals money, it's compensation. You steal an object, you can return it. But kiachareisha yomu sa'odom, after someone is killed, ha'im yuchal lashiv nafshoi lov imshvichas damarotzeah, can you restore the life of the victim by killing the murderer? There's always a common argument of the anti-capital punishment people. Can you, are you going to kill another person, right? They said this at that wild man in Los Angeles, Tukey Williams, where the whole chevra said that also. You know, kill him, doesn't bring back the four people that he killed. That's what she's saying. Because she's saying in a more sophisticated way than their, you know, somewhat brutal arguments. She's saying, in terms of the way we look at the world, so now you'll kill Avshalom. He wasn't really the murderer, by the way. Others killed Amnon. But nonetheless, he's not the one. So you'll lose two sons, not one son. And third, and of course, in 17, V'lo Yisrael Kim Nefesh, God spares no one. Ratzaloma, She'af al pish shabalama zeh lo yenesh hachotei, im kol zeh bedino rovo yenesh koroi, ba'olam anafrashos. So while we live in a world without a God, it's a kind of sparkle too. So he's going to see to it that the guilty person is punished. If Avshalom is guilty, if Avshalom is guilty, Meir's next door. If Avshalom is guilty, then he'll be punished. God will punish him in this world or the next world. There's a dayan who takes care of everything, a dayan emes. And fourth, she says that don't forget that also part of Ashgacha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Choshev Nachashavos L'Oseis L'Ish Kidrachov V'Chifri Ma'alolov. We say this pasuk in Elah. Ba'olam Hazeh K'dei Shelo Yinesh Ba'olam Haba. God judges people, sometimes gives them the fruits of their own actions, or the bitter fruits of their own actions in this world, so they won't be punished in the next. Who's she talking about? Amnon. Don't think Amnon's a tzaddik. So this is also part of God's din, that he also gets justice. He did something which was abominable, and now he pays the price for it. So that's what she says to David. Now I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about you. It's all you, and it's your family. David, of course, let's just look first at number 19 in the Rabag, in Nun Gimel. Again, the Koelet for Rabag from the end of Shmuel Aleph. Right, also another general rule, that a person is afraid of asking for something, don't ask it directly, ask it through a parable. You can get someone to say anything. In fact, that's what Nachman Hanovi did, the same thing with the fate of Bathsheba. The woman extracted from David, almost like a good cross-examiner, extracted from David precisely the answers that she wanted to make her point by asking the questions very perfectly phrased. That's why Yoav went to Tekoa, chose the Yishoch HaChamah. She knew exactly what to ask. So Yoav knew he couldn't do it directly, but this person could do it indirectly using a parable. How does David respond? David is no slouch. Let's look now at number 15. Pasuk Yud Tes. So Vayan Hamelech Vayomer El Hoisha. Don't hide anything from me. Tell me exactly what's going on here. So the woman said, speak to me. Vayomer Hamelech. Hayad Yoav ita? Did Yoav get to you? Is he behind this? Is Yoav's hand involved in this? Vatano Yishev Atomer, Chaynaf Shechadani Amelech. Indeed, as you live, my king, im ish lehemin ulahasmil, mikol asher dibarni Amelech, I can't veer either to the right or to the left from everything the king said. Yoav is the one who commanded me. He's the one who put it in my mouth for one purpose. In order to, in a circuitous way, bring about Avshalom's return to Yerushalayim. V'adoni chacham kechachmas malach elokim. It's a famous biblical phrase. And my master, the king, is as wise, like the wisdom of an angel of God. V'das is called Asher Baret. So David is no slouch. David already saw through the questions exactly what she was getting at and who masterminded the whole thing. Indeed, that is what happened. Vayomar Melech El Yoav, Hinei Nasisi Tavarzeh. Then Yoav comes forward and he says to David, so now is the time. David exposes the plan, and Yoav says to him, he puts all his cards on the table. He says, now is the time to bring him back. And David agrees. He agrees to bring him back, but under the following conditions. The conditions are, anyway, Yoav, the pasuk says, he fell on his face, Vayvarach as a melech, Vayomer Yoav, Hayom Yadav, Decha ki matzasi, Psalm 15, ki matzasi chayim b'aynecha, Adonai HaMelech, now I know I find favor in your eyes, that you're doing what I want. Yoav went to Geshur, brought Avshalom back to Yerushalayim. But, Vayomer HaMelech, it's bold, the last pasuk. Yisov el beiso, let Avshalom go to his home in a roundabout way, meaning let him not come back with any pomp, a parade that princes throw for themselves. Let people know he's not back. Or let people not recognize that he's back. Ufanai lo yireh. He may be back. I don't want to see him. I'm not ready to see him yet. And indeed, Vayisov Avshalom el beiso, Avshalom sneaked back into the palace, or his chamber, near the palace. Ufnei HaMelech lo ra'ah, but he did not see the king. And this went on for a while as well. So he returned, he stayed in his home, he would not go to the king until he was requested. Now this, of course, was unwise. See, David, and it's an unusual situation, David is feeling for a proper approach, because he has a son who's a murderer. But how do you deal with him in such a way that the whole kingdom is not destabilized? There's turmoil in the king's house. The turmoil is unfortunately brought upon himself by David. But the problem is, and you can see it as a problem, anyone who goes through this with children or friends sees it all the time, you can't have a half reconciliation. You either do it or you don't do it. And especially in this context, and we'll see next week, it's very unwise, because Avshalom chafes under the ostracism. He may have been a fugitive, but now he's back in the palace, so he begins to perceive himself as the king-in-waiting, as the popular crown prince, and as David's successor. Or, put another way, David's replacement, because David is still in mourning. So David brought Avshalom back physically, but he was still estranged from him emotionally. And so begins the Mered, the rebellion of Avshalom, which starts in the next parak. The Mered which will eventually end the life of Avshalom, be another dark chapter of Malchus Beis David. So now is a fair time to ask a question that we'll return to in the coming sessions. How is it that David HaMelech, whose monarchy is the ideal, and for whose restoration of that monarchy we yearn every day, David Melch Yisrael Chai V'Kayom, how is it that he had such sorrows with one child after another? And Shmuel Beis, especially now, these prakim, it's all the tzaras of David HaMelech. If you want to find good things about Malchus David, you have to look in the Talmud. The Navi just tells us one tzar after another. How is it that we yearn for Malchus David if Malchus David was one tragedy, one sorrow after the other? So this, of course, we'll explore in coming weeks. Next time we'll look at Avshalom Part 2, which is the rebellion of Avshalom, what his motivation was, how David sought to handle it, and its unfortunate outcome, and what it meant for David's reign generally. That'll be next time. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.